And he says, remember that at one time you Gentiles by birth, called the uncircumcision by those who called the circumcision, Jews, a physical circumcision, he says, made in the flesh by human hands, and that isn't to be run over. Made by human hands is a Jewish term used technically throughout the Bible for idols. Made by human hands. Here's Paul saying something quite startling. He's saying circumcision is something made by human hands. You couldn't hear that as a Jew or a Greek speaker without thinking, don't idolize the physical. Don't idolize. Remember how Jesus said to the Pharisees, you're so good at keeping up your own human traditions that you avoid the tradition of God. So don't idolize theological explanations. We need theology. We need clarity. We need humility to learn from the past church. But we don't take formulas and idolize them, say, I'm for this formula, I'm for another formula. I'm for transubstantiation or whatever, beautiful as it is, and I think it's a very good formula. I'd use it myself, if understood. The trouble is, to understand transubstantiation, you need to have studied Aristotelian philosophy. How many of you have done that? Perhaps two or three of you. You need to understand what Thomas meant by it. Nobody does. So people will misunderstand transubstantiation and people will use it wrongly. It doesn't mean the term's wrong. It means we haven't done a historical study to find out what they meant by it. But in any case, we don't want groups saying, oh, I'm for, get a little transubstantiation group and then get another group who talk about something else. These are formulas that are taking us into the mystery. These are doorways into the truth. So you don't shout about the door, you open the dash door and go into the truth. So we're not here. All our stuff can be, we can do so many things by human hands and end up supporting it, but it's a human tradition, it's not coming from the mystery. Remember, here it is again, remember that you Gentiles, were at one time without Christ. You didn't have a Messiah, of course. You were aliens from the commonwealth of Israel. Politeia is commonwealth, polis is a city, politics comes from that, of course. You didn't belong. You were strangers to the covenants of the promise. You didn't know anything about it. You had no hope. And it's the only time in the New Testament it appears. You were atheists. There's the word, atheoi. You were without God in the world. Atheoi. You were without, you might have had gods, but you weren't aware of the beautiful God that is. You didn't know. You weren't part of this. You were atheists. But now, okay, this is the point. Something's happened to you and they know it. Now, in Christ Jesus, you who were once far off have been brought near. And you've been brought near by the blood of Christ. By Jesus, love-giving has broken the barriers down. In fact, he'll go on to say that. For he, this is Jesus who gave his life on the cross, he is our peace, our shalom. He's the one that brought us together. You had the wind instruments playing out in the paddock. You had the, what else have you got? Stringed instruments over here playing away, thinking they've got all the music together. And you've got the money, ding, 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 the timpani and all that down the back. Percussion instruments down there playing for their worth down there. And then Jesus came and said, oh, come on, come on. And he got us all together and we played this wonderful symphony. We thought, what were we doing in our backyards before? And now we've got a symphony of harmony. The whole of creation is involved in this now. That's what it was like. But he's our peace. He's brought us together. In his flesh, he made both groups into one. He spoke to the woman, the Samaritan woman at the well. And the apostle said, what's he doing talking to a Samaritan woman for? Well, he was talking to a Samaritan woman. He was looking at the centurion who said, boy, this bloke's terrific. He was, you know what he was doing. He was bringing them all together. He broke down the dividing wall, that is, the hostility between us. And some even suggest there, maybe this is what he's doing. If Paul is in Caesarea writing this letter, the reason he's in Caesarea is because he was accused in the Herod had, there was a big wall in the temple saying, you know, prohibited for Gentiles. They weren't allowed in, this dividing wall. And only from now on, only Jews were allowed into this place. They accused Paul of taking Trophimus, a Gentile, into the temple. He didn't, but they accused him of it. Now, in a way, symbolic, though he didn't do that, Paul was breaking down the barrier that says only Jews, only Catholics, only evangelicals, only whatever. He was breaking down this barrier, the hostility between us, because here he is on a cross with his arms stretched out to the whole world. Anybody can come. He can't stop you coming because he's nailed, and it's for everybody. He has abolished the law, the Torah, with its commandments and ordinances. That doesn't mean they don't apply. If they apply, well, of course they still apply. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, Jesus hasn't changed that. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not kill. They're all sensible things. And so all that was beautiful in the Torah has been taken into a bigger place now. But the Torah as the system whereby we live is no longer the system whereby we live. It's no longer the full revelation of God's will. It was a partial insight, a partial revelation, because the people who created it had only their eyes half open. They'd never seen Jesus. They'd never seen him. So how could they have perfect understanding of God's will? Now we've seen that love is what matters, and that you can love without the Torah. You can love and do what you will if you're really loving. Your love is what Jesus was doing, and you don't have to be circumcised to do what Jesus is doing. So you can be any culture and bring it in. All of that is what he's saying here. And why did he abolish that as the system that shows us God's will? He abolished it. That's a big, strong word, but Paul will say elsewhere, meaning it's transcended. It's everything beautiful in it has been taken to a bigger place. The Beatitudes. It was said to you of old, Torah, hate your enemies and, you know, love, etc. But I say to you, love your enemies. Now, that's very different. Love your enemies. Doesn't mean feel good. It means do good. Pray for them and all the rest of it. Why did he abolish this? That he might create in himself one new humanity. This is big stuff. Beautiful, isn't it? One new in the place of two, thus making peace. One new humanity. That's why they call him the second Adam, using the image from the story, the poetry of the Genesis account. He is the new Adam. He's beginning a whole new way, a new creature, a new way of being human. In the new community of love, which shares the life of the risen Jesus, as he said earlier to the Colossians, there's no longer Greek or Jew. There's no longer circumcised or uncircumcised. And in the Galatians, he says there's no longer male and female, meaning don't judge things by your sexual gender. Don't do it like that. What matters now is your love. And it's open to women and open to men equally. There's no hierarchy here. There's no authority mechanism coming in the road. These are all true, beautiful things to be shared, not differences to make a community of power or submission or whatever else. There is only Christ. He is all and he's in all. Galatians, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision is anything, he says. It's not important. What does matter, that there be a new creation. That's everything. So if Christ is in us, he says to the Corinthians, there is a new creation. Everything old has passed away. Everything has become new. So he did it for that, to create one new humanity, and that he might reconcile both groups, and you've got the impression, the Gentiles and Jews, to God in one body. Here's Paul's passion. One body. Through the cross. It's not through elections and compromise and whatever else. It's through the cross. It'll be a suffering. It'll be a hard thing. You'll have to bleed. You'll have to let go everything that isn't God. You'll have to let go all your favourite little hymns and favourite little practices. And if only the European world had have recognised this. But we were blind then, and we're blind now too. Only the next generation will see how blind we were. Because if you knew you were blind, then you'd look. But we mainly don't know we're blind. But we are, surely. But we saw what the Europeans did when they went out into the New World. They took European Christianity and they bypassed the cultures, the beautiful cultures of this people and all that God was already doing in them. And they said, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't, you've got to dress like this. Went to Japan and said, you've got to genuflect. And they bow. But so the early Christians are all bending their knees and so I can make it trivial, I don't want to. Good people are doing that. Those who really saw weren't doing it. And the debate went on. And you've heard about Matteo Ricci, you've probably heard about De Nobili, and one in Japan, one in India, who were aware of what was going on. And then the big debate went on and the Vatican came down on the side of the traditionalists who said you can't do that and all that. Let's not blame them, let's just admit it was wrong. And we've got to look to see what we're doing that's wrong. It's going to be through suffering. We'll have to let go a lot to get ecumenism. We'll have to be willing to listen and pray and allow for He put to death the hostility in himself, the hostility that was there between Greeks, Gentiles and Jews. Jesus put to death by absorbing the pain of it all and showing that what matters is love. Romans, while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God through the death of his Son. While we were enemies. Through him, he says to the Colossians, God was pleased to reconcile to himself all things by making peace through the blood of the cross. So he said this before. And you who were once estranged and hostile in mind, doing evil deeds, he is now reconciled in his fleshly body through death. And our author goes on, Paul now into the Ephesians, verse 17. So he came and proclaimed peace to you who were far off, and peace to those who were near. Peace to you Gentiles who were atheoi, etc. And peace to this lovely Jewish community that had so much going for it. Okay. For through him, both of us have access in one spirit to the Father. And he concludes this chapter writing to the Gentile communities, you are no longer strangers and aliens. And don't let anyone treat you like that. And no, you're really at home. You're no longer strangers and aliens. You are citizens. Sum politis. He uses the word sum a lot of times in this letter. Extraordinary number of times. Puts a little sum on the front of a noun or a verb. And he creates a word, in other words. You're with. It's a little thing, little particle on the front of the noun. You are together citizens. Creates a word. With the saints. You are members of the household of God. And then he moves to the image of a house as distinct from a household. You are built upon the foundation of the apostles and prophets. So this is really important. It's not just you don't build it yourself. You've got to be built on this foundation. That's why the church is one, holy, Catholic, apostolic. It's based on the experience of the first disciples of Jesus, who are commissioned, and we have to stay in touch with that mission. And we don't have a personal, private experience of God and then launch out and create a new church on the basis of it. If you have a beautiful, which I hope you all have, a beautiful, inspired thought, bring it to the body and share it. Firstly, it's a good way of testing it, because it may be a bit silly too. Our beautiful insights aren't always right. Bring it to the community, and the community... You remember what happened to the two disciples on the road to Emmaus? Beautiful experience of the risen Christ. And they came back to Jerusalem. They didn't go off to Tarsus or something and create a new church. They came back to the Jerusalem. They told about their experience. And you remember the words of the community were, it is true. He has shown himself to Simon. The exact words of the community to these two. It's true because your experience is validated by the experience of Peter, the one whom Jesus said, on this rock I will build my church. So there's community here. You are citizens with the saints, members of the household of God, built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets. He doesn't mean the Old Testament prophets. Prophets here is the Christian prophets, those, because apostles are those who keep us in touch with history, tradition, the words of Jesus, the the dogma, the teaching. The prophets are those who keep us in touch with the Spirit. The surprise of Christ. Because we're not only people who hold on to traditions and keep them in a static way. The church is changing. It's a living organism. And it's living because Christ, as in the book of the Apocalypse, is speaking to the churches through his Spirit. So the prophet is the person in the community who's open to the new thought, the new vision, the words that now apply in this culture, to this community, to this situation. They're the prophets, and we have to listen to them. Listen to the tradition, but listen also to the Spirit. And they won't be contradictory. But remember Jesus said, I'll send you the Spirit, he will bring you unto all truth. So it's the constant Christ present in the community, enlightening, enlivening us. Christ himself is the, how do you translate this? The word is akrogoniaios. It means the corner goniaios, the cornerstone, which is akro. The Acropolis? Polis is a city. Acropolis is the high point on the... So it's the Acropolis. It's the... So it means an angle stone, but an angle stone can be a cornerstone, it can be a keystone, or it can be a capstone. The one that caps the whole building off. How you translate it depends on the situation. The Greek is very general. Here, I think you should translate it. It's the capstone. It's the one that holds everything together and is the peak of it all, holds it all like that. Christ is the capstone. Having, sometimes the word means at the corner, sometimes it means the keystone. Having spoken of Christ as being head over all things, Paul speaks of him here as the stone which is at the highest point of the building, crowning the whole edifice of creation. The church, in which the Jews and Gentiles are built together, and again he's used a word, oikos is a house, sun oikodomeo is to build together, reaches up into the heavens, where Christ is, its head is the source of its unity, its life, and its organization. All the members of the church are living towards being with him forever in glory. For the church, as he has said, is his body, the fullness of him who fills all things. Christ is filling the whole of creation through his presence, through his Spirit. The part of creation that actually, what's the word I want? Not focus is good, but distilled. The distilled presence of Christ is seen in the community of the faithful believers. In him, says Paul, this is the conclusion, the whole structure is joined together and grows into a holy temple. Joined together is the medical word in Greek, and it's the word used for, the word harmony comes into it. It's like you've got a broken arm and you put the joints together properly. You get it together correctly. You have to break the bone even and set it so that it's in the right place. But the word, we get our word harmony from that word joined together in English. And there's the idea of the music of the spheres, the music of the whole of creation, a harmony of song and praise and love. We are joined together and we grow into, it's all the time, having a holy temple in the Lord, in whom you also are built together spiritually into a dwelling place for God.